Now, the Augusta Masters is in full swing, of course, at this stage. Rory McIlroy has spoken this week about how he is now using meditation as part of his preparation. And it's maybe not paying off for him 100% yet, but he's still within shouting distance anyway. And we'll see, maybe the mindfulness will kick in now. So Dr. Kate Kirby is a sports psychology consultant. She joins me now. Kate, you're very welcome. So if we look at golf for the weekend that's in it, and is there a sense that possibly more so than some other sports, golf is all about for these guys getting the head straight, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the challenging thing about golf is the amount of downtime you have between performing golf shots. So in a 4.5 hour round, you're probably only actually playing for about 2.5 minutes if you count up the amount of time it takes to actually execute a shot.
Oh, so yeah.
When athletes are comfortable when they're busy and being physical and doing stuff that they practice all the time, it's the time where they have nothing to do that actually is the most challenging from a psychological perspective. And golf is probably the sport that has that big, that sort of disproportionate amount of downtime.
So even like it comes down to in between shots, they're trying to stay in a particular zone and in focus, but they're having to walk along people. They're possibly interacting with people and stuff.
Yeah.
So that must be very challenging, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's impossible for anyone to maintain a peak level of concentration for 4.5 hours as well. So what you want to be able to do is kind of elevate your concentration just during that sort of probably 90 seconds before you hit the shot, and then be able to switch off a little bit, but not completely switch off. So it's sort of finding that balance in between the shot of being present and aware, but not tiring yourself out either by being totally focused for 4.5 hours.
And also, presumably, if you've driven a ball into the trees or something and you're furious with yourself, you need to be able to let that go very quickly, do you?
Yeah, a lot of the, I suppose, the link with mindfulness is also acceptance and commitment therapy, and that would very much be linked to that idea of just letting things be and taking things as they are and accepting them. And that definitely is important in golf. In like, if you're beating yourself up about a shot that you just hit, you're not going to be in the right mental state to hit the next shot with any freedom or conviction.
And equally, if you play a bad round, you'd put that behind you as well, do you? Like Rory McIlroy must have had to put his first round behind him and just, start fresh again, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways in the Masters, they're lucky in that they have an evening to recover. They can sleep in it and wake up fresh. But in a lot of golf competitions, they have 36 whole days. So I've worked with players who find that if they've had a good or bad morning, that it's hard to start the second 18 with a clear head. So they've used some sort of mindfulness and meditation in that sort of gap in between the two rounds. Go off and find a quiet place and just try and clear your mind so that you start in a, I suppose, more emotionally stable place than you might be if you're influenced by the morning.
And interesting, you say even if they do well, there's still danger there, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, because then you start getting white line fever and thinking about the end, you know, and the chance that you might be in contention to win, but you have 18 more holes to play.
Yeah, because you do hear this stuff now. You hear Rory saying a bit of it as well, that like focusing on winning is not the healthy thing to do. Is it more that you're trying to focus on the process of what you're doing right now, kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's great to have a goal and a focus on winning to get you out of bed and train when it's raining and dark in the middle of winter. But actually, the closer you get to competition, the less you should be thinking about the outcome and the more you should be thinking about execution and how to do things rather than what you want the end result to be. And that just creates anxiety.
And in a way, it seems to be about switching off your thinking completely as well, isn't it? Like Rory was talking about juggling as well. And he was saying how he'd seen, I think some of the women golfers are doing juggling as well.
Yeah. So athletes are usually really comfortable. As I said, they're comfortable when they're busy and being physical and doing what they know how to do. It's the dead time before they compete that often mentally is the one that they struggle most with. And when you're preparing for competition, and athletes will often taper, so they'll be doing less training in the lead up to competition, which means they have more free time on their hands. So filling that downtime with something that's going to keep you mentally busy but not stress you out or tire you out is really important. So,
what, that juggling, you would require to be completely focused on it?
Yeah, it's not completely. You need to be mindfully engaged in juggling in order to be able to do it. So that's a really good example. I've used the world champion rower that we have, Sunita Pospora, does Sudoku before she goes out in the boat. So she sits on shore and she's just there with her pen and paper to keep her mind off racing, but not to get too sleepy or tuned out either.
Okay, so because they have, time between when they need to, you need to stay near the zone, but not in the zone.
Exactly.
You work with Annalise Murphy as well, do you?
Yes, yeah, I've worked with Annalise for, I think, since she was 15, and she's almost 30 now, so.
Yeah, and in terms of, she has that downtime issue as well, I guess. That's something like the Olympics, like that must be a big issue, isn't it?
Yeah, the Olympics is really challenging from that respect, because you're in an unfamiliar environment, you don't have your home comforts, you probably don't have, you know, in Brazil, we didn't have English TV channels. So filling that time was probably the biggest challenge from my perspective. The days she was racing were really easy because we had a very set routine and she was busy and she had things to do. It was the days that they had a day off or a rest day or on her medal race day where there wasn't enough wind and there was a lot of hanging around. We had built in a lot of strategies around that. So she had, she would have podcasts downloaded, ready to listen to, because again, you need to be present mentally to follow a podcast, whereas you can listen to music and be miles away in your head.
Okay, right.
And again, things like magazines, we had those beach balls, wooden bats and balls, and just kind of tipping them over and back to each other just to stay alert, but not to overthinking.
Yeah, yeah. Lego as well. I see some of the rugby players.
Yeah, I was really interested in an interview Jacob Stockdale gave around the All Blacks match where they were asking him how he coped with the pressure. And similarly for the rugby team, they have so much time in the hotel between sessions and, you know, being in a hotel room, there isn't a whole lot to do. So he said he was bringing Lego into camp with them and just to pass time. But actually, when he sat back and reflected, he realised it was a mindful activity because, again, you need to be present to build something well. And he said, you know, he was passing hours at a time without tiring himself out and without getting stressed out.
You see, a lot of people will find, they'll be thinking, God, this is all very new agey, because I suppose we would have thought traditionally sports psychology and stuff was about developing the winning mind and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Has there been a shift into this kind of more mindful space now?
Yeah, I mean, I've been practicing sports psychology for 15 years and I think if I had suggested meditation type interventions and mindful colouring, for example, people would have looked at me really strangely 15 years ago. But this is kind of known as the third wave of psychology almost, where it's about being mindful and present and accepting and commitment therapy. Whereas previously things like cognitive behavioural therapy would have looked at, you know, trying to manage your thoughts and emotions. Mindfulness is more about accepting them.
So you don't engage them and try to prove them wrong.
Exactly.
You just go, okay, I accept that, let it float off and move on.
Acknowledging that the annoying thoughts or doubts or anxieties are there, but choosing to shift your attention onto something that's more conducive to performing.
Yes, and it is so incredibly powerful to move your attention elsewhere, isn't it? Like you can be locked into something going around and around and you just say, okay, move your attention, and actually it has extraordinary results. I saw Rory saying, or someone saying about him, that he's going to be looking at the trees more in Augusta and looking at the scenery and stuff like that. That's all part of this, yes?
Yeah, so again, you mentioned the walking between shots, and, you know, I've worked with golfers who struggle. They love playing in Ireland because they're playing with their mates and everyone speaks English and you can distract yourself by just having chit-chat between shots. But when they go abroad and they turn professional and they're playing on tour, you don't have that. You don't have that camaraderie with the people you're playing. A lot of them don't speak English. So they were finding that a real struggle in between shots, how to fill that time that they hadn't had to consider before. So that's an intervention that I've used a bit with golfers, is just having an awareness of your surroundings. You're out in nature. Golf courses are generally pretty beautiful. And, you know, be aware of what you hear, what you see around you, the colours, the trees that are in bloom,
and
whatever.
This is for mindful kind of grounding, using your senses basically.
Being present and not thinking ahead to the next shot and not thinking back to the last shot and invoking emotions like regret or anxiety.
Okay. And how else could you use the senses with other people you work with?
So again, I guess as you get closer to the shot in golf, golfers would have breathing as part of their pre-shot routine where they're standing over the ball and just focusing on taking, you know, one deep, slow breath. Some people don't like focusing on breathing because they said it actually makes them more anxious. So things like when you're standing over the ball, maybe shifting your attention down to the soles of your feet and, you know, where your weight is distributed or pressing into your big toe. So you're taking the attention away from the importance of the shot and what you're about to do and freeing up your mind so you can execute.
Okay, so that's something we can all do. Am I right in thinking that with Natalia Coyle, you work with her a bit on senses stuff as well?
Yeah, that's right. So the modern pentathlete Natalia Coyle has a very long... full day of competition. She usually has about 12 hours because all her five events happen in one day. So again, there's a lot of downtime and gaps to manage. And one of the things she does when she's fencing, which takes 2.5 hours, but there's 36 fights in 2.5 hours. So again, a bit like golf, there's loads of gaps in play. And so tuning into the senses and tuning into what she can hear in the hall or what she can smell, which often isn't that pleasant in a fencing hall. But tuning into the senses around her, again, allows her to take a little bit of a mental break from training, but not totally switch off.
Okay. Now, there's I suppose if people are thinking about this in terms of their own lives, and a lot of people are into mindfulness these days, right? It's very easy to be at home in your chair in the quiet room and be mindful and have your app on and whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, I'm mindful now. You go out into the world and there's all this stuff going on and everything and it's coming at you and people are talking at you. And you think, I have time to be mindful. So I presume, if you're working with a footballer and he's got all the mindfulness down, you're out in the cut and thrust of a match or you're taking a penalty or something.
Yeah.
Is there some way of is there an instant trick you can do there to kind of mindfulize yourself, if you like?
I think it's probably similar to any sort of thing that you're trying to execute under pressure. If you don't practice it in your day-to-day life, you're not going to be able to just draw on it in a game. You're not even probably going to remember to do it under pressure. So,
it needs to be almost
instinctive. It's a commitment. It's a lifestyle commitment to engage in it on a regular basis. And I guess the brain imaging technology has moved to allow us to see that there is a lot of evidence around mindfulness and switching on certain parts of the brain and switching off, say, the amygdala, which is the emotional part of the brain. People who engage in mindfulness a lot tend to have less activity in their amygdala and much more activity in their frontal cortex, which is the logic part of your brain. So I guess to go back to the football player question, someone who's committed to mindfulness and does it on a regular basis, they've established that brain connectivity and neural pathways, so they don't get as easily hijacked by their emotions under moments of pressure. So, you know, there isn't really a switch that you can flick during a game, but if someone is committed to it day to day, they'll remember to do it.
They're going to be able to do it, to just step back.
Yeah, exactly. Take a breath or tune into what's around you. Yeah, they'll remember. They're much more likely to remember to do it.
Yeah. So it's all back down to the practice, really. As we're told. Okay, Kate, that is absolutely fascinating. I'd love to have spoken to you more about it. That's Dr. Kate Kirby, sports psychology consultant. And Kate, how can people contact you if they want to get in touch?
They'll find me on Twitter at sportspsychkate, or they can get me through my website, katekirby.ie.